Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora te whānau. Welcome to Recuperate, formerly known as Hot Waffle. Now back to Recuperate.
No, we're Hot Waffle. Okay. Oh my God, we got to be Hot Waffle.
Katie, my name's Katie. Lucy's over there.
Hi, my name is Lucy. I'm over here. Hi. Hi, how are you?
Welcome. Hope everyone's having a nice day, a non-blustery, wind-free day.
Yes. Well, it's funny, right? So we're in the corner building on corner of Jackson
Sports.
And Chapel. Yep.
Sports. Is it very windy?
Well,
is it like, creaking?
It's... This is, okay, I'm just going to try and get the pitch.
Okay. Oh.
That's the noise the wind makes on the upper story through the windows.
That's
not every wind, but that whatever direction of that. It's the meteorological equivalent of running your fingers down a blackboard. It's not pleasant. It's not a lovely, cosy howl.
Yeah, that's like the wind in the maternity ward of Masterton Hospital. I don't know if they've rectified it, but that was an identified actual problem.
Really?
Yeah, an architectural issue with the build.
Well, it's not very soothing.
Very, very loud. No, it wasn't. Well, that's no good.
No.
But on a happier note, would you like to share your news? Your news.
Oh, that news.
Yes.
What, that news?
Are you allowed to share that news?
Well, it's funny. I'm not sure, but okay, I'm doing it.
Oh.
I'm not sure. I know that the Herald and RNZ have told people.
Yeah.
But yes, so...
Well, she's gone all coy now, which is not like her at all. Should I intro for you?
Yeah, go.
So it's not like you're blowing your giant, enormous trumpet. Lucy has been nominated as Local Reporter of the Year.
Yes.
For Stuff and the Post. Not Times Age.
No, they made a mistake.
Okay.
So I think it's being rectified now, but yeah, I'll be representing Times Age. Yep.
For the Media Awards, are they?
What
are
Voyager
called?
Media Awards.
Voyager 2026 Media Awards. Yeah. We're very, very proud and happy, and you're up against 3 others. You've got a 33.333% recurring percent chance of winning.
I do. And it's just such a treat to have even got this far.
And the company you'll keep at the awards, Corin Dan, no less, and other...
Guy and Espina.
Oh.
This year I might be bold enough to go up and talk to people I don't know. Yeah, because last year I went because the paper got nominated as Regional Paper of the Year.
Yes. And I styled you.
You did
And you
style
look magnificent.
Me. I did
You
look...
should have gone to talk to people, but you didn't.
I did. I couldn't. It was funny. You know, and me and you talk about this a lot, but sometimes you just don't got it, you know? And particularly if, you know, I do tend to get a little bit overwhelmed by people I've seen on the telly. There's no doubt about it. And there were a lot of people I saw on the telly. I saw Andrea Vance. I'm like, I got such a hot girl crush on her, you know, and then she was like just looking like a powerhouse. And I just shrank into myself, which was such a shame. So hopefully this year.
You've got a right to be there this year.
Yeah, my
Everyone
own
will
right.
be like, ooh, look at you, a little local reporter. And when is the big
22nd of May.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've got my ticket.
Have you got a plus one?
No. And this year with,
allowed to.
This year with prices, jet fuel prices and getting everyone there, I think, probably. I'm excited.
Could I come as your plus one if I paid for myself?
Yeah, you could. I don't know what the deal is with that. I don't know how much the tickets are. But yeah, okay.
Could you please inquire?
I will inquire, absolutely.
And are you going to buy the dress that we saw? Lucy tried on dress when we went on a short but exciting holiday to the Kapiti Coast. And there's this brilliant shop in Margaret Road in Raumati Shops called Live Again or something, or Once Around or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, something.
Yeah.
Secondhand consignment store.
Very good.
Flashy stuff.
Yes.
And you tried on this dress. And I have never wanted you to buy a dress more. And honestly, it transformed you. It fit you like a glove. It was bright red. It was power.
It was
power to the max.
Everything. Yeah, it really was. And it had like these incredible sleeves, didn't it?
God.
And I came out of the changing room and I just said, "You're fired."
Everybody's fired.
I felt like I should own a palazzo in Venice. Oh, like it was that type of a frock.
And with gold accessories and a cuff.
Yeah.
And then I made you try on some really high heels with
yeah.
it.
Silver, weren't they? Yeah. They were silver, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty cool. But I've been working out, so I've got some arms to show off. I'm
Oh, you don't want to cover them with
I don't know. But I did love that frock. And I did say, didn't I, if I got yes. nominated, I would go buy it.
And who nominated you? What was the process?
Well, you, so.
Did you nominate yourself?
You're encouraged to. You can't do it without your boss's sign off. And then he also, they're all signed off.
Yeah.
By the staff executive team. But yeah, you have to. So for the local journalist of the year, I had to find three articles that I was particularly pleased with. And there's some criteria that you have to fulfil. So I chose my big expose on the Pukaha story.
Yes.
Yeah. And a health story. And I think I chose the... sorry, forgive me. I chose a story about the... What are they called? Alzheimer's one.
Oh no, Lucy.
I know, I couldn't remember then. About their fight for funding, because they've been historically unfunded, not funded, like completely and utterly. So and it was interesting kind of going back through your back catalogue of stories, but though I will be perennially proud of the Pukaha stuff, because I just, you know, that was, like, that I can even remember how I physically felt on the day before we published. You know, I took myself off to a separate desk. I was surrounded by paperwork. I was really focused. I'd worked so hard and so diligently. And what's interesting is I've done data stories since, and I keep getting overwhelmed. Like, hopefully tomorrow we'll be publishing one about legal aid, for criminal cases. So I've talked to a local lawyer who does legal aid, and just some of the challenges around people getting it, and the squeezes on the justice system, on that part of the justice system. But I kept getting really overwhelmed and unable to pick a path. But that wildlife centre one, it just, I don't know what it was. I just, like, a magic moment. So I'm, you know, I continually try to recreate that feeling.
Hey, Anne, can we just quickly trace your stratospheric rise? Because you're a midlife career changer person.
Yeah.
And so from finishing your training as a postdoctorate...
Postgraduate
diploma in journalism. So from finishing that, when was that?
Well, I think it was about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
It must be coming up to maybe four now, but it's definitely, yeah, and it has been... I think that's, you know, when you change career later in life, you're so much like, I ain't got time for, I'm not fucking around, I'm just going to get on with it, you know.
Yeah, and I'm not going to hold back.
Yeah, and I think also, like, the transferable skills I didn't know I had, like time management, discipline, because I can be really, really organised when it comes to data. Like in planning, you know, I was working in policy and I was often taking that policy to be tested under, like, semi-judicial processes. So I'm really aware of, I like to think I'm quite aware of what I need to be able to justify a position.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of journalism is I don't need to come up with the answers as such. I just need to ask the questions. So that's a massive relief, you know, because finding the answers to planning questions can be really hard and long-winded. So I didn't know how useful some of those skills would be. But what I would say to people who are thinking about changing career is just do it. You have got absolutely nothing to lose apart from income. You've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Actually, I'm a great one for reading a headline and then thinking I know everything about a story, but I did see, I don't know if you've been watching Riot Women.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't watched it, but I'm aware of it. Yeah.
So the pianist in that, I can't remember the name of the actress, don't ask me, but I saw on Instagram she was being interviewed probably by Women's Hour, and it was saying she was told by her GP, if you don't pursue your dream of becoming an actress, you will be ill for the rest of your life. And And I thought that was really interesting because not following her dream had made her shrink into herself.
What was she doing?
I don't know.
I just took away the headline.
The Paul quote. It was all about the Paul quote. But I thought, you know, so if you're out there and you've got a burning ambition.
That's a great quote. That made me instantly want to know.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And I wish, I instantly wish I'd done better research.
Satisfying my itch of, I don't want to be killed by my dream not being realised.
Yeah. Well, so I think, you know.
I've been toying with it myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What's your.
Oh, no career change, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think.
It's tough out there. May as well do it when it's tough.
Exactly. Exactly right. And I think also, I'm still working in planning at the minute, and I'm working in this really interesting space in planning where we've got a lot of reform. And for a long time, I was really angry about reform because I don't think we ever did the RMA justice in the first place, right? It got bogged down. But I've actually decided, like, for my own mental health, I have to see the opportunities that this reform space offers. And I think the same can be said about this weird time that we live in with the existential threats of Trump, AI, environmental collapse. Is that you're absolutely right. There is no better time now to try something. I think people who are in this AI universe in particular, people are looking for something refreshing and different and new. And if you're and stories of people who are kind of going, yeah, just going to do it, you know, just. So it's funny because ever since I submitted for the awards, I've been thinking, shit, I haven't written a decent story for months, you know. ever since.
Imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I know. It's just really hard because I've got such big, like the stories I want to do are not 400 word ones. I know I like doing those because it's a dopamine hit and I'm addicted to those. But, you know, I'm really conscious that there are these other big questions I kind of come up with and I really want to answer. And they take time. And often I worry that other people are, you know, the day I press publish on a big story, some other dude has gone and written it better, you know, all that kind of thing. But anyway, I've just got to keep one foot in front of the other, right?
Yeah. And what do you get if you win, apart from accolades and joy?
Yeah.
Is there a monetary reward?
Probably.
Probably not.
I don't know. I don't know. It's funny. I did hear last year, and this could be semi-apocryphal because I'd had a few wines by this point, but somebody had won Regional Paper of the Year and it wasn't us. And somebody said to me, he said, well, you know, actually, you know, if you look at the history of who wins the Regional Paper Award, often the following year, they don't actually exist.
Oh,
you know, like
really?
Sometimes. Yeah. Okay. Like I don't think awards are any guarantee against obsolescence.
Yes, yeah. Could be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. So it's been an interesting year, but it also, you know, just an interesting year in terms of keeping up with everything. Like the news cycle is insane.
Relentless.
Yeah. What's going on in your world, Katie? Apart from just look absolutely stunning today. Navy blue like no one else
I know. School holidays are nearly over.
Yay!
Hooray! And my hot take, we've got to do our hot take again this week because I know we had such fun last time.
We did.
I just watched Jacinda, because I wasn't sure I was going to watch it, the film.
Oh, yes.
And a friend of mine went to see her. She was in town, in Wellington, at an event.
Oh.
She had no idea about.
No.
And my hot take was I felt a bit of sadness around it. Like, we watched the movie, the documentary, that's incidentally also up for an award.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And beautifully done and really, really sad.
In what way did you feel sad?
I just
about
terribly
what?
Sad about what we had and what we didn't know we had. And will she ever come back? I doubt it.
Yeah.
And what we've lost, really.
Yeah.
And the treatment that she had.
Yeah.
And then my friend who was going to see her at the event a couple of nights ago in Wellington and honestly probably had 7 or 8 text and email updates of security requirements at the event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and, like, you know, you'll be searched at the door, no bags, no water, no, like getting on a plane security, no liquids, all things like that. And I just thought, that's really, that's so sad.
Yeah. And you have to ask yourself, don't you, like, what does this say about us as a people, as a nation, where I truly believe, and this will be unpopular with a whole swathe, I truly believe there was nobody during that COVID time in terms of leadership in New Zealand that didn't want anything other than the best for the nation.
Yeah.
And yes, there were winners and losers in that. There always will be, right? There always will be. It was unprecedented. That's a word I like to ban because everything seems to be precedented now. But, you know, and what does it say about how we view women in leadership? Women with power.
Yeah.
We simply don't appear to like it or have the maturity to handle it. And I feel desperately sad. There were, you know, I just felt.
Have you watched it?
No, not yet. I know. I feel a little bit tentative because.
We were both crying. I mean, I don't think it even matters what your politics are unless you were one of the people who went to the, protest and are deeply, deeply down that rabbit hole. It's just, you saw how hard she worked and how the sacrifices she made and every night reading so well informed. And I just can't imagine the current government, any of the coalition members in the current government being across so many issues so well.
Yeah.
Like well informed and had a great people around her, of course. Yeah. But as it says in the film, ultimately it's her decision as the Prime Minister. She had to make a lot of hard calls. Oh. And yes, some of them weren't always, as you say, equitable or going to be, you know, there are going to be some winners and losers. But her main thing was to keep people alive.
Yeah.
And she did.
Yeah.
They did.
Well, that's right.
Government did. Disingenuous, I think, to bring it all up again in an election year to use that as a, you know, it was unprecedented. No one had modelled, they might have modelled, but no one had modelled that event and the severity and the global spread and stuff. So
that's right.
Using it now as they put us into debt, blah, blah, blah. It's simply not true.
Yeah. I do also wonder, you know, I think we talked about this last time we were on air, that I think our current government is underplaying the potential severity of the current crisis that we face globally. And I almost wonder whether their kind of "we'll sit back and hope as a plan" approach is in direct contrariness to what they did during COVID. You know, we don't want to be tarred with that brush of actually having a plan.
Yeah.
But you know, and I'm not
to be having a response.
Yeah. Bernard Hickey, if anybody's interested in an economist's view, I mean, Bernard Hickey, I just find is such a solid, hardworking kind of thinking person. You know, he was on air with his wrap up. It's called Hoon Around the Week, I think, or something like that. And he was saying, you know, what are we doing? We're kind of sleepwalking into everything's all right. Everything. What did he call it? It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Oh, fuck. You know, like is that the plan? I want to be told to conserve fuel. Somebody tell me to do it. I'm happy to. You know, we've done a few reports now in the Times Age about the impact on diesel users, our fisher people out at sea, our farmers. This is men and women who are doing that kind of primary production work, and they will be going out of business. There's no doubt about it. They cannot afford to put that stuff. And they can't keep, you know, some will have to pass on the costs. One fisherman I spoke to said, we're just taking it on the chin. You know, and trying not to pass on those costs. Because there comes a point where the market says, no, thanks, we don't want your fish.
Mm.
We'll go and do something else.
Mm.
You know, interesting times. I think we're foolish to think that this isn't an important moment in the globe's history. Yeah.
Crikey.
Oh, that shut us up, didn't it?
Can I make a podcast recommendation? Or yes. Shall we play some music?
No, first? Make yours. And
so
then...
I was listening to Media Watch, which is anybody who's interested in news and you haven't discovered that. That's
so good.
It's so good. Colin Peacock does a stellar job. And he interviewed Nicole Shavastik, formerly a Kiwi, now a very well-respected journalist over in Australia now. And last year, she started with her colleague, whose name I'm going to forget because that's how I roll. She started a podcast called Truth, Lies and Media, which is basically trying to speak truth to power to the billionaire class. Just really bold, interesting, intellectual without being elitist take on the world news. She was on Media Watch saying when it comes to Trump, we have to stop treating him as a normal politician. He has gone way beyond. And so she's just kind of calling on journalists to call him out.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
There was a young journalist, perhaps English or perhaps US based, who did a timeline of Trump's. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
So he took the data. It's there. It's the data, and interpreted it into a timeline of Trump's tweets and showing his activity over a 24-hour period.
I have heard about this. Yes.
And the tweets were coming from his account, and they were the tweets, the particular tweet about criticizing the Pope. And then you could see the frequency of the tweets were every 4 or 5 minutes in patches at like times when the rest of America would have been asleep.
Yes.
You know, so not a well man.
No.
Probably not able to sleep. And, you know, we all know if you don't get proper sleep, then that's.
Exactly.
And have a huge effect on your mental health.
Yep.
But it was really interesting to look at the timeline. So basically from the period of about midnight till 7 a.m., he was tweeting all sorts of unhinged stuff and personal opinions and criticisms of other people.
And that was the night of the Jesus AI,
that was, yes,
it?
You're right. So that's what started it all off, that he posted a picture of himself.
Yeah.
And then when someone did call him out in a stand-up at the White House, he was like, I was just showing myself as a doctor, as a healer.
Yes, but now the word on the street, and I can't remember where I heard this from, is that Caroline Levitt, his press sec, said to him, tell them it's been doctored. Now, I can't remember where I heard that from. I've got, you know, I can't. So, you know, I know. It's the guy I'm following on Instagram, can never remember his name, but he is a physical therapist with 14 years experience in his field. He cares for dementia patients.
Oh.
He's been an early caller outer of some of the pathologies that he's exhibiting.
If you hear a snippet of information but can't interpret it correctly.
That's right. So, and goes off on a tangent. So, and you could see him kind of making it up as he went along. I was a doctor, because we have a Red Cross person out there that we're interested in or looking after or something, like just one Red Cross person. That's interesting. Why didn't we know this person? And then did you see the follow-up AI image of him and Jesus, like, cheek to cheek? I mean, you know, you...
Laugh. It's how bad does it have to get before somebody does the 25th Amendment or whatever it is?
Exactly, right? You know, which is a very hard ask, but also... You know, you have to...
Does it have to be by your own party, or can someone else invoke it?
You have to have a supermajority, I think, in the Senate, I think, which is the... And it has to be, all your kind of cabinet ministers, essentially.
Yeah.
75% of them have to sign.
Yeah.
which is a bigger threshold than for impeachment. But impeachment also carries similar
barriers. But he could be impeached also, couldn't he?
Yes.
Based on his...
Yeah. And I think
current convictions.
I think I heard that Hegseth has got at least four impeachment actions going against it. I mean, what happens when you see men like that behaving badly is it gives, I mean, Hegseth is off the hook, you know. Marco Rubio has just retreated into his oversized shoes, but Hegseth is taking up the slack that, you know, and so where are the grown-ups in the room, right? Where are the grown-ups in the room? Because clearly something is happening because we now have a potential ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel for 10 days while they all get in the same room. You know, I mean, this has demonstrably been an awful, awful war in which we are in the same place as if not worse than before the war started. But, you know, still people, there are diplomatic efforts going on. How are they happening? How are they happening? I can't see how Trump is somebody that you could talk to reasonably on that score.
Yeah.
I don't know. My God, it's bananas, isn't it?
Super bananas.
But who knew that, I mean, I'm not Catholic, so I'll just put that out there now and, you know, probably tend on, you know, quite an extreme end of the atheist spectrum. But, you know, who knew he would come out as the leader of the rebellion in like a Star Wars kind of, you know, he's like all being beneficent and kind of going, he don't scare me. You know, I'm like, hey, Leo, can I have your photo?
Yeah, as far as popes go, he's pretty...
He's cool.
Cool.
Exactly right.
Progressive,
yeah.
And I also need to promote a podcast.
Yes.
With across party lines. Do you listen to that?
No, I don't. Is that a Kiwi one?
Yes. It is with the Honourable Christopher Finlayson.
Oh, now I see him on Instagram and he is...
He's a delight, and I did have the opportunity to work with him when I worked with, he was on the board of a workplace that I was at some years ago.
The
Attorney General, so, and he was a National Party person, obviously, so, yeah. But still, Chris Finlayson, and he talks with, it's produced by, oh God, this is terrible. I can't remember.
Get two menopausal women in the room.
Oh God, hang on. So it's Cross Party Lines. So it's a weekly podcast about the political landscape in New Zealand and around the world. And it's with, oh God. Phil Goff.
Yep.
Obviously representing the Labour and, you know, Liberal also has a great career internationally as well. And Chris Finlayson and Sam Collins, who was the producer, and it was his brainchild and baby. But he's stepping away from it because he's going to be running in a Labour seat for the election.
Okay.
Which is amazing.
Yep.
But Christopher and Phil are going to keep going with Cross Party Lines because it's been such a success because they're from polar opposites of the political spectrum.
Yes.
So obviously don't share, but just the way that they talk and they talk around problems and you see things from all angles, just really good.
That sounds, I will definitely be
cross party lines.
And I think it's so important for people in positions of authority or, you know, have a special skill set to demonstrate talking with other people who don't share all their views.
Yes. Like we were saying before, you have to sit with the complexity and the, you know, you might learn something new or see things from a different way from two people who are capable of having those type of discussions without it descending into something awful.
Yeah.
And Chris Finlayson is drier than a moth sandwich.
Isn't he?
Brilliant. I just really enjoy it.
Yeah, his delivery is just, he has a particular pace.
Oh,
you know, like it does. slowly builds, and then mic drop. Yeah,
yeah. Phil's not like that, but he's very genial and very has got a great career as a statesman behind him. So, you know, and his early life and his own family tragedies. So he's a really interesting person. It's a great listen.
Awesome. awesome. I'm signing up to that.
Okay, okay. And we're going to listen to a piece of music, which I think you'll enjoy because it's got a little, some horns in it.
Okay. Oh, I love me a horn.
Our theme isn't anything particular except new discoveries I've made. So this is, I'm not sure how to say it, Muerta, or they're basically an 11-piece marching band from Germany, but a techno marching band.
Oh my God. It's ticking all the boxes.
Yeah, so they arrange techno, house, deep house and all that by well-known DJs in a marching band thing, and they've got like glockenspiels and the drums, the whole stuff, and they just kind of cruise around and do their thing.
Shut up.
So this one is called Locked Down 2.
Okay.
From the Empor album, and it's a bit long. I see how we go.
Oh yeah, do it.
Okay, here we go.
Can you hear my tummy rumbling?
No, I can't.
Good.
Here we go. Lockdown 2 by Muerta. Muerta. We'll be right back. Time I was like, should I turn it off? It's too long. It's too let people sit with complexity and boredom. I added that.
Oh, it was great.
That was so funny.
It was all. It was.
And
like,
listen, yes, I have to apologise because I totally pronounced their name wrong.
Oh yes, what did you...
as Lucy said, a Muerta, my Latin roots coming through. But it's of course it's German and it's Mert. Mert, which means Mert? Pack of wolves.
How is, what's the spelling?
Mert. M-E-U-T. M-E-U-T-E.
Oh, that is a tricky one.
Mert. Mert. Anyway, yes, that was funny.
That was great. We had a little bit of a fun time.
Bit of glockenspiel.
It was very sexy. I thought it was very sexy because it was so
you were
measured.
Oh.
Yeah. Like it was, you know, it could have, like if I'd written it, I would have had a massive climax in the middle. You know, like we would have gone like all the instruments all at once, but they were just so.
No.
Yeah, very.
It's just a glockenspiel on its own for a long time. Oh, and everyone was like, what the hell?
Now,
there they are. Lucy's got some local news to share.
Oh yes, so this is so in today's paper on page six, it's the second story in the school nurse story. So I wrote a story maybe a couple of weeks ago now, because principals of four secondary schools in the region had notice from Tuora Compass Health, which is our regional public health organisation, that they proposed to cut school nurses, the school nurse service, by 60%. So we'd go from something like 3.5.
Not every school currently has a nurse, right?
No, that's right. So yeah. Four schools, I do write them down somewhere here. I think it's, so Wairarapa College, Kurunui College, Makaurau College and Chanel College, which have a combined student population of 2,500, have 3.5 full-time nursing staff between them.
Yeah.
And this reduction would result in down to 1.4 across four schools.
Yeah.
Now, in my first story, which I do urge people to look at if you're interested in this, because I do think it's going to take some public outcry. And, you know, there is building. The school principals are so upset because this is a service which has demonstrable, measurable positive impacts on the health and well-being of students and their whānau in those schools. They represent the early intervention service. They can, at Kurunui, for example, the doctor actually comes on site once a week and works in tandem with their school nurse. You know, the problems that they are able, or the challenges that they are able to head off early, are untold. And now, my personal view, and I'm editorialising a little bit here, but Tora was really, really quite blunt in their letter to the schools. Their argument is, we are not funded sufficiently to deal with the demand and the complexity of the demand, right? So more children, so they're saying Health New Zealand are not funding them properly. Now, my editorial voice is telling me that that was like a shot across the bows. They're waving a flag in order for the community to jump up and down. I haven't been able to speak to somebody. You can't speak to somebody directly at Tora. They, you know, you go through their media people, which is fine. They do a great job. I'm not casting any shade on them. But to me, it felt kind of political. The letter felt political to me. So the first of the stories that I wrote a couple of weeks ago was from the principal's point of view. These cuts would kick in from 2027. And then this article, we talked to Megan Savage, who we both know because she works closely with a school nurse. Barbara Gladding from, I want to say this correctly, Barbara Gladding from Tūhoranga Trust, which is like a health and education networking service.
Yeah, and they do some fantastic public education programs.
Yes, they do. They really do. In fact, they've got an amazing...
A series of
public lectures. Community conversations. Yeah, amazing. And then Marilyn Palmer, who is a former public health nurse with about 20 years' experience. Like, there is nothing good about this outcome. Do you know what? I would rather go without something.
Take the lunches away. Take the lunches away.
Take something off me personally. I don't know. I would pay more for a prescription if I knew it would fund these school nurses. Like, even my daughter, who is Flo, who has never used the school nurse, I said to her, the school nurses, they're thinking of taking most of them away. She went, that's ridiculous. Like, they do a great job. I see them all the time.
Will schools, through whatever mechanism, through principals, through boards, will they be able to, are they in a position to ask the public to support them, or does it have to come from what can happen?
So Health News, interesting question. I don't quite know yet. I mean, I do know that by speaking out, these principals, Barbara Gladding, Megan Savage, Marilyn Palmer, are all saying, we have to say something here. This is unacceptable. I think Tora Compass Health were saying that with their letter, personally, and that is my personal opinion. At the end of the day, it's Health New Zealand who hold the key to the funding. They are doing a review of youth health services. I don't know what that means, because these days when anyone does a review, it doesn't mean anything seems to get better. It seems to get worse, right? I do think the public need to speak up on this. I think if you feel strongly about what you read, hopefully you find my reporting balanced and gives you the information that you need that I was able to get hold of at the time. People are keeping tight-lipped. Tora Compass Health don't want to say anything until they've met with principals. That's happening at the end of the month, I think around the 22nd of April. So I'll have another story definitely after that. Health New Zealand didn't want to say anything. Even the minister didn't want to say anything very much. I think people do need to say something. We're talking a 60% cut to a very small number leaves you with an incredibly small number. In my first story, Wairarapa College gave me figures that in the 1 year, last year, over nearly 1,000 presentations of young people to the school nurse service.
Wow.
And that covered sexual health, mental health, physical health. Marilyn Palmer, in her 20 years, she worked up in Auckland. She lives here now. She said that in her career, she must have, she stepped in and was able to ensure that young people suffering from sexual abuse were able to get the help or prevention necessary, you know, to get the help that they needed, you know. So we're talking, this goes from the minor end of the spectrum, and let's face it, what kids have to put up with today, with the world as it is, there's not really very much on the minor end of the spectrum, right through to the really serious stuff. School nurses are there. Because another part of the genius of the school nurse service that I can see from what I'm hearing is that they kind of sit independent from the schools. They're not your teacher. They're not the principal. They operate under a different code. Mm. And they are able to make sure that you have a confidential voice. Mm. It feels to me like a bit of a scandal that we are even in this position.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I will keep on to this because I feel very strongly about it. I feel strongly on behalf of the people who are feeling strongly about it. You know, like if I have to cover myself in any sort of caveat, you know, I will always do balanced reporting. But at the moment, you know, I'm not all I'm hearing is this ain't good.
No.
Yeah. And the numbers speak for themselves to a certain degree. So, yeah, if you are out there, you're either a school nurse and you want to talk to me confidentially, you're a student that would like to speak to me confidentially about your experience of the school nurse service, or you're a teacher, anybody involved in that service who has been touched by that service, then do reach out to me. My email is lucy.cooper@stuff.co.nz. I have to say that stories are elevated in the public consciousness when people are brave enough to speak directly to a journalist. And we have ways of making you safe. So, you know, I do hope that,
we have ways.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I think it does, you know, and tomorrow's story about legal aid, you know, that was a lawyer who's willing to go on the record. It's nothing kind of controversial, just kind of saying, this is my experience. People can relate to. This is my experience stuff.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Mm. And we can also write to any of our
MPs. Absolutely. I think that's where I need to go to next. Absolutely. Is ask our MPs what they think about this. Write to your MPs, write to the Minister for Health, write to Tuora Compass Health, write to Health New Zealand. Just if you feel strongly about this and want to understand why this decision is happening and how we can avert this potential kind of health crisis, because where are these kids going to go? Also, you know, Barbara Gladding makes excellent points that if you are able to see a nurse on site, it means your parents or caregivers or somebody else isn't having to drive you to an appointment. It's always more frightening.
It's free.
It's free. Absolutely. It's free.
Because it's not free now, right, when you're over 13? So this is college.
Yeah.
Is this colleges or primary schools or this is, everybody?
The school nurse service in these four schools is free. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But are they reducing the nurse service across all, all education, primary schools as well?
I don't know. I've only been focusing on this because this affects these secondary schools. I'm not quite sure of the landscape actually about health access in primary schools. There's 2,500 students will be affected by this.
Mm.
And just to give you those figures again, so Wairarapa's workforce of 3.5 full-time nursing staff will be reduced to 1.4. impacting Wairarapa College, Kurunui College, Makaurau College, Chanel College.
Mm.
I mean, in my view, we should have a school nurse in every school. Or at least available part-time for every school. Like
Raytown Primary didn't. I know a lot of the receptionist or the administration person of a school would moonlight as a... you know, looking after the sick bay. The kids would look after the sick bay during the breaks, remember?
I know. Flo kind of loved it, but also was like, oh.
And then maybe had a first aid certification, but not a...
No. These people...
Nothing like having a presence of a...
Yeah, a qualified professional nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah. who's committed to the health and well-being of young people. So, yeah, that's my soapbox among many. I've just, like, it's crowded out. I'm going to have to get a new room for all my soapboxes.
I just want to play a quick song before we go.
Yeah.
Because we need to say goodbye to a beautiful singer who passed away 3 days ago in Ireland, Marie Brennan.
Oh, yes, Clannad,
yes, one of the Brennan clan, of which there were 8 children, including her sister Enya, from Gweedore, which is the Gaeltacht Irish-speaking area of Donegal.
Oh, wow.
And they're all, like, fluent Gaelic speakers and incredible musicians, but her voice is just, like, nothing on earth.
Okay.
Ethereal. And this is the song that they first came to big fame with. Like, they had deals with, they were doing folk music, but this was, they hit the big time because it was a song called Theme from Harry's Game, which was of a television movie or maybe a television series about the Troubles.
Yes.
So it's just a quickie. So we'll play that and we'll say thank you to Marie Brennan, or Moya, as she renamed herself later in life.
Okay.
For her beautiful music.
Lovely.
Yeah, and then we'll come back and say goodbye.
All right.
Shivers.
Full body chills. Thank you for that. That was lovely.
Yeah, I was sad, and now I've done a good re-listen of Clannad and lots of other, when she had a solo career. A bit of Enya as well, for good measure.
Oh, yes.
Hey, wish everybody a happy week again.
Yes.
Stay safe in the coming winds and rains, perhaps.
Yes.
And we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Katie. I've loved
Good luck for your nomination.
Thank you.
We'll have another show by the time you've had it, eh?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right. Cookie down.
Cookie down.